Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kavit Akhwayi. Iran's ninth parliamentary elections, March 2nd, 2012, will be remembered as one of the most significant elections in the Islamic Republic's history, not only because of the high turnout, which was expected, but due to the message that it sent of strong unity and backing behind the Islamic Republic, a message to both regional and Western countries, such as the United States and its allies, including Israel. Well, in this news analysis, we will discuss why these elections were so important, given the constant threat of war against Iran in a region where people are rising against their governments, unlike in Iran. Let me introduce our guests. Here in the studios, we have a professor at the University of Tehran, Fuad Izadi, who joins us. From London, we have Middle East expert Chris Bambury. And last but not least, Joshua Blakeney joins us. He's from Veterans Studio from Calgary, Canada. Gentlemen, welcome. Fuad Izadi, first to you. This is a very historic day. Why have Iran's parliamentary elections drawn this attention, both at home and abroad? Even Iran's leader has said these elections are more important than the previous ones.
I think the elections today in Iran is significant because of the threats that we have been facing here from the United States and Israel. As you know, in the last several months, both the U.S. President and the Israeli Prime Minister have threatened to attack Iran militarily. And because of these threats, we have a sort of a situation where people are concerned whether we are going to have a war in this region, another war or not. And since the U.S. President and the American officials and some of the European countries claim to want to have democracy in Iran and sometimes attack Iranian government for lack of democracy, when you have elections, when you have people coming to polls and voting, will get a lot of attention. Why? Because it's in these days like today, that we find out whether democracy exists in Iran and whether people of Iran support the government by participating in elections or not. And based on the polls that we have and based on the ballots that have been used so far in today's elections, we see about 65% participation of eligible voters, which is quite high. In the United States, in the last congressional elections that they had in 2010, 37% of eligible voters participated. So here in Iran, we have almost two times as much, a little less than two times as much as the United States voting behavior. And that is significant. It's significant because it tells the American side and others that have been threatening Iran that the population here is more or less behind the government. And if you are planning to attack Iran, you're going to face a population that's going to stand up to you, and you better think twice before doing that.
Chris Bambury, of course, Fuad Izadi makes a very important point in terms of what these elections have meant so far. And we were just looking at live images there that were coming through still with the voting going on, of which it has been extended five times over. But tell us what you think about the media saying that, well, you know what, we need to see if these elections work because it will show whether people are behind the Islamic Republic, whether people are behind Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and that he has strong backing and popular support. I mean, you know what, that's just old news. Iranians are over that. They don't need to show whether they back the government, back the Iran's leader, because the West makes it look like, you know what, from one day to the next, that could be over and these elections are just a sign. Do you think that that's the way they're spinning this by making statements like this?
I think you're right, and I think the reports of the high turnout that you're carrying will be a slap in the face for people in the West, and I hope that Obama, Cameron, Sarkozy will take this and look at it. But I think, really, as was the case with Iraq, as was the case with Afghanistan, people in the rulers in the West ignore the history of any country which they set their sights on. And I think what they fail to understand is that when they come out with these attacks on Iran, they come out with the sanctions, they come out with the lies about which they are telling about the supposed weaponry that Iran has, that for many people in Iran, for the vast bulk of people in Iran, there is a sense of nationalism. There's a memory of what Britain and America has done in Iran, the Mossadegh coup, the installing of the Shah. And whatever people who are critics of the Islamic Republic are, many of those are going to rally behind that. And the regime obviously has popular support. There is no question about that. And I think it's, you know, to hear people lecture Iran about democracy, I think you have a right and you have the you can criticize if you are opposed to any attack on Iran. And I am on record as criticising, having criticisms, but I'm criticising someone who's clearly against any attack on Iran, someone who is against the Shah and against what went on. Britain and America have no right to make these criticisms because of what they did under the Shah, with their support for the Shah, the overthrow of the Mossadegh government. They have no right to make those criticisms for their support for Saddam Hussein in the war which was waged with their support against Iran. They have no right to make those criticisms when they are silent over what is happening in Bahrain, what is happening in Yemen, and what is happening in Saudi Arabia. And I'm sure they will try and make some criticism of these elections. Perhaps the Iranian government should ask maybe if the British government would like help in investigating the links that someone like David Cameron has, we discovered today, with the Rupert Murdoch news empire, when he goes horse riding with one of the newspaper editors, Rupert Murdoch's newspaper editors, on a horse lent to that editor by Scotland Yard, the British police. You know, right. Maybe if the Iranians started making some allegations about it, David Cameron would get angry. I'm sure that's not going to stop him making some criticisms, but I think this is a slap in the face to America and Britain, and I think they should pull back from these sanctions and these threats against Iran.
Well, you talked about two things that I'm going to elaborate on. Before that, I wish the picture would go on to the voting that is still going on, which we're seeing with the long queues there. Joshua Blakeney, of course, like to get your impression of this. We had Chris Manberry talk about two things, the sanctions and the threats, two things that really have been counterproductive. They haven't worked. They haven't been successful. But yet the U.S. Continues with it. Are they speaking on a position of strength when they say that, when we look at a country like Iran in terms of how it's united and, of course, the influence that it has in the region, or does it need to do that in order to bring down the position of strength that Iran has based on the plans that they have for the region, for example?
Well, I think what Iran is offering is the threat of a good example. You know, this was the same with Cuba, which is why the United States and other imperialist countries tried to sabotage the Cuban Revolution. Iran is actually having elections in the Middle East, of all places. Most of the Middle East is ruled by corrupt kings and puppet presidents. And yet, the only exceptions where we see ballot boxes coming out is either in Gaza, where Hamas was elected legitimately in what Jimmy Carter called a free and fair election in 2006, and in Iran. And we had all this hype and spin about the previous election in 2009 being a stolen election, even though polls from ABC News before the previous Iranian election showed that the overwhelming majority of Iranian people supported President Ahmadinejad. And no doubt these fraudulent claims by Western governments will continue. And of course, interestingly, right now in Canada, we're discovering that, in fact, the ruling governing party, the right-wing neocon conservative party, may have actually stolen the election here themselves with these mysterious robocalls, where members of the electorate in Canada received phone calls telling them that their polling stations were in different locations in more liberal and left-wing parts of Canada, so people weren't able to actually cast their vote, which led to a right-wing majority government here in Canada. Likewise, in the United States, we know that George W. Bush stole the election, his first election. And so we know very well that governments in the West are stealing elections. And I think Iran is offering the threat of a good example, because if the people of the Middle East emulated the Iranian revolution, you know, picked themselves up, extirpated the Mephistopheles of the dictators in the Middle East, like Iran did by extirpating the Shah and ridding themselves of a comprador, a puppet of imperialism, that this would be detrimental for the US and Britain, and most significantly for Israel, who actually wants to foment civil war in the Middle East and doesn't like it when they see Arab and Muslim people, and in your case the Persian inhabitants, majority of your country, expressing self-determination and resisting the impositions of imperialist countries who themselves have governments whose legitimacy is questionable.
Fouad Izzadi, an important point regarding how the media has broken this down. I talked about how they always seem to think that elections or turnouts show support for Iran's leader. We've eliminated that question, but another spin in a matter of speaking they're putting is these elections will show who's behind the leader and who's behind Iran's current president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Is that accurate? Tell us your thoughts on that.
You know, I was watching the BBC coverage of the elections before coming to your studios, and I was just totally amazed. For a little while, I thought they're talking about some other country. The way they're covering Iran's elections and what is happening in Tehran are really two different things. And it's a sad story for an organization like the BBC and a number of other Western media outlets to basically violate every single ethical standards of journalism, and for them to just outly lie about what happened today in Iran is a sad story. I feel sorry for the British citizens that are paying the bills of the BBC when the BBC is basically displaying fiction and just displaying the wishes of the British Foreign Secretary instead of reporting reality. But we saw today, for example, in Iran, and the BBC is not reporting that, is that we have both factions of Iranian politics, both the reformists and the principalists participating. The reformists had actually three lists. They presented three lists in Tehran and in Iran, throughout Iran. We had the former President Khatami, who was one of the leaders of the opposition in the presidential elections 2 years ago, voting today in Tehran. We have had other opposition leaders voting in different parts of Iran. And BBC is not reporting any of that. What they are reporting is this fictional story about the supporters of Ahmadinejad and supporters of the leader. And I just, you know, I'm a professor at University of Tehran. I follow Iranian politics, and I just don't understand what they are talking about. Whoever wrote that story just doesn't know the basics of Iranian politics. The president's supporters presented the list. There were over 20 different lists presented by different political parties, different factions. And this idea of fighting between this group or that group doesn't make any sense. We have all these different 20 lists competing with each other. But within the people, among the people who support the president are the most adherent supporters of the leader, and vice versa. So this idea of separation, or I think maybe they were talking about the Oscar-winning movie that Iran presented a couple of weeks ago to the Oscars. The separation, I think, comes from that story probably. But the reality of Iranian politics is totally different from what the Western media is covering. And that's sad, because I think they are again becoming tools of American and British empires. They are again becoming tools of war, and that's very sad.
Right. And of course, I believe that they're also trying to pretty much create division and then tap into the people who perhaps every country has it, some people who oppose perhaps either President Ahmadinejad or maybe some of the policies that have been carried out. Chris Bamberry, let me get your reaction to what one voter said today. He said, "I am here to support my establishment against the enemy's plot." Your thoughts? And of course, doesn't that show that Iranians are well aware these threats of war by the U.S. and Israel and the devastation that the U.S. wars have had, such as the ones in Iraq and Afghanistan, and also in terms of sanctions, that it's them, the Iranian people, that the U.S. government is really pinching and squeezing, and therefore they're not going to stand for that?
I think you make a very good point about the sanctions. The sanctions are always aimed at the people. It was the people of Iraq who suffered from the sanctions for those 10 years. It wasn't, unfortunately, the rulers of Iraq at the time. And they are going to be the people. And I think the sanctions are deliberately aimed to devastate the Iranian economy in order to bring Iran down. That's what the Americans hope. I think they're going to be scotched in this because of the support of Russia, China, and India from that. But I think the point about Iran is that ignorance about Iran is absolute. If these people think in the West they can just simply launch an attack on Iran and things are going to crumble, they're living in cloud cuckoo land because of the historic record I spoke about earlier. And the ignorance goes so far. I mean, how can Iran produce an Oscar-winning film? There is no discussion about the vibrant cultural life of this country. Its film industry is really interesting. There is an ignorance about this, and there are lies spread all the time. In the United States at the moment, we have Republican contenders for the presidential nomination vying with each other to come out with lies about Iran. We have the Israelis spreading lies that Iran is capable of, has missiles capable of hitting the United States. This is the discussion which is going on about Iran in the West. And I think, well, that's why in Britain, I think it's one of the reasons why Press TV was taken off access to the Sky platform, because they don't want the truth about Iran coming out. They don't want a dialogue with people in Iran coming out. And I repeat the point, you can have criticisms of the Islamic Republic, but those criticisms, you have no right to criticise if you're plotting a war. And I firmly believe that is actually what Obama and Cameron are doing. They have plans for a war. Whether or not they can pull that off is a different matter. Certainly the Israelis have plans. They are not allowed, should not criticise, and they should not be allowed to speak so. And it is terrible to see on your film, as we are talking about what is happening in Iran today, demonstrations against Yemen and people dying once more and nothing being said in the West. Demonstrations in Saudi Arabia, which are not being reported in the West. What is happening in Bahrain? A silence about that in the West. The British royal family can go there and be given jewels. British senior policemen who are disgraced and resigned because of their connections to the Murdoch Empire. One of them who gave evidence to the Levinson inquiry here this week, who is now, was essentially forced out of his job in Scotland Yard and is now in Bahrain teaching the Bahrain police counter-terrorism techniques to deal with these demonstrations. I don't hear much criticism of this in the Western and the British media. But this is what should be talked about.
Right.
And I think it's important that people in Iran know the majority of people in Britain, and I suspect the majority of people across the West, are against any talk of a war against Iran.
Well,
that was
making,
the case in Afghanistan, it's the case in Iraq.
Let's look at that, Joshua Blakeney. It's the United States with the famous "all options are on the table," and it's Israel. Well, I mean, what's the popularity of the of those two people on top in the U.S.? Barack Obama, average perhaps 45% in popularity. Benjamin Netanyahu. Well, we saw what the strikes have done a few months back. How dissatisfied people are there, and these two are out making threats. Of all countries, on Iran, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think in Israel it's quite evident that there is some popularity for smashing any Arab or Muslim country. Israel's become a very mean society, perhaps comparable with the American South in the heights of the oppression of the blacks historically. But I mean, I think that the main point is that Iran is expressing decolonization. You know, after the Second World War, there was this kind of promise of the colonized world ridding itself of imperialism. imperialism ridding itself of these European empires, and invariably that decolonization process failed. They killed Patrice Lumumba, they defenestrated Kwame Nkrumah, and so what's happening in Iran is so significant. And you know, when we see the fact that Iran has quite a strong military, when we see the fact that Iran is trading with China and India and many countries, it's quite evident that this Western policy has actually failed. I mean, it's possible that Israel could, you know, do some kind of strategic strike, but Iran's in a position to retaliate. And so Iran has a strong military. Perhaps the comparison historically would be China, you know, rising and expressing its self-determination. China at one point was carved up like a shawarma into, pieces by the imperialist countries, by Germany and Britain and the United States and many countries. But now it's a global hegemon, and I think that Iran's future is a positive one. I think that Iran will continue to rise, continue to work at its democracy. Of course, a revolution and a democracy is always a work in progress. There's always imperfections. But, you know, Iran is way ahead of all the other nations in the Middle East, which appear to be corrupt dictatorships. It's evident that Western countries want slave governments. If they're democratically elected slave governments, so be it. And if they're corrupt dictators who are slaves to Western imperialism, stooges to the global oligarchy, then that's fine too. And Iran is putting its own candidates forward from different parties. I mean, I gather you have a very complicated constitution that, you know, political scientists really ought to study in the West. This is disdained by those who would like to control the Middle East. And I believe the era of, Euro-American empires, you know, dictating to the Middle Eastern countries is coming to an end. But it's up to the people of the Middle East to emulate Iranian self-determination, to rise up and resist the impositions of the imperialists, not allow themselves to be used and infiltrated by the Mossad, for example, which we know the Israeli Mossad is penetrating protest movements throughout the Middle East. They need to be vigilant that they're not being infiltrated, whilst also not tolerating the impositions of U.S. and British and European-backed dictators.
We're going to leave it there. Thank you. Joshua Blakeney from Calgary, from Veterans Day. Appreciate your statements. Also, Chris Banbury from London. Thank you, Middle East expert. And here in the studios, Fuad Zadi, thank you so much, Professor at the University of Tehran. And thank you, the viewer, for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Great day for Iran. Of course, you can always send us any comments or suggestions you have. Our email address is newsroom@presstv.ir. From Mikhail Vatakhvay and the entire team here in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.